is Marco Pollo coming at you from Kaechung, deep in the heart of Chinatown. This is The Culineers, episode 2. I'm here with Beale Parmstrong.
Hello, how are you?
And our very, very special guest, Catherine, say hello.
Hi, it's Catherine Burrell here. Do I have a nickname that you've given me?
You don't have one yet, but we're going to come up with it on this show.
Okay.
Because if you're with the Culineers, you have to have a Culineers nickname.
A mantle.
I'm going to give you a real intro in a second.
Okay, that's fine.
I launched into our improvised opening salvo. Frank and I just had a delicious dinner. I thought it was pretty good. What did you think? What would you rate it?
I would rate the food delicious, an A+, I thought.
Okay.
The service was not the best.
It
do you guys want to say the name of the establishment?
Oh, we're already being edited. We were at Lausanne. Is that how you say it, Lausanne?
It's a pop-up in the Far East Plaza in Chinatown.
If you guys haven't been in the Far East Plaza, it's where everything's going on.
It's kind of a Filipino, I guess it's maybe like a Filipino-inspired menu.
Mm-hmm. Wedged in there near Chibo and Howling Rays and
I think they take Filipino traditional dishes and then, like, do riffs on them.
Yeah, it was very riffy.
Jazz riffs. Jazzy little riffs.
Yeah, it was very riffy.
The nice thing was it was BYOB, so even though we were cooling our heels on the couch for a half hour, we had plenty to drink, and then I had to kind of pull some rank when we sat down, let them know that we are the Culineers. We are doing a live radio show pretty soon, so we had to kind of get the meal going.
Panties dropped.
We weren't too classy to not bring the last little bits of our wine bottle with us when we left.
That's a fine move, right? Yeah. You can just, like, bring an open bottle of wine already. Yeah. Why does anyone have to have pride about that kind of stuff?
There was some wine left. We didn't bother to go and ask for the cork back, so we just walked out with an open bottle of wine, which we then balanced in the car on the way over here.
I love that. Taking the wine, leaving with the wine, it's like you got to eat all the parts of the buffalo.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we don't live in a time where we should be reckless with, there should be no wastage, so I think I endorse that.
I hid the bottle of wine in the corner, Catherine, because I didn't want you to see it. I was feeling a little insecure. I'll bring it out in a little bit.
Bonterra.
And see what you think about it.
I know what that is.
Why would you feel insecure about that in front of Catherine?
Well, why don't I get into it then so everyone knows who we're sitting with? It's hard to introduce a Renaissance woman when she's done so many things, but let me try. Catherine Burrell writes TV shows. She wrote a memoir. She has. She's a writer. She's a broadcaster. She's a cool jock. I believe she also worked at the Belieber.
Yep.
And she's written extensively about wine, extensively about food, and that's kind of what we're going to concentrate on tonight. But who knows? There are no rules. We could digress into anything, really.
I had a restaurant column in the mid-2000s called. It was for one of the alternative weeklies in Toronto, and they were like, "What do you want to name it?" And I had all these names, and then I was like, but I think I really want to name it Columdine. And they're like, you can't name it that. And I was like, but what if we just name it Columdine?
That's a great name.
I don't think that there's maybe ever been a better, more compassionate title for a food column.
You must have been very close with the people there to crack that.
Yes. Okay. I slept with most of them.
All right. We're getting right into it. Hold it. I just realized, am I talking? Is this a mic? And is this a mic? So we do have three mics.
That's not...
No, you're using the same mic as me.
All right. That's like a spit guard.
Yeah.
Do I need this?
That's for all your drool.
I should get a little closer. Okay.
I don't know what that is.
I think that sounds a lot better. Right?
In Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. It's like a lens for your mic.
All right. I'm just going to check our levels, and they're great. Okay. So we're back into it. So you were friendly with everyone there. You could make a Columdine joke. That is, I think that's the definition of edgy. Jonathan Gold would never.
Never. No. I strive to be more of like an Iggy Pop than like an Enrique Iglesias in my life.
Of food writing.
Because.
And I can make that joke about Jonathan Gold because we had lunch once, which I'm teasing every episode, but I'm going to wait. That's going to be a full episode where I talk about Jonathan Gold and I's lunch.
You definitely brought it up last week.
Yeah, I've been teasing it every episode.
You guys are doing, like, same name drops every week. The name drop.
Only so many name drops. I think that's the only name drop we have.
In the food world, we have a few others. We're saving them to be guests on the show.
Okay.
Well, let me just start it right off, Catherine, since you are in the hot seat.
Well...
You had the column. What do you feel like, just for the listeners, are your food bona fides before we get into your wine bona fides?
How specific do you want?
Tell us how you got the first column or how you get into food writing.
I
think a lot of people think that's interesting. I hear that a lot. Like, how do you get into food writing?
What happened was this. My father was a chef, so I grew up, I had a very, mercurial Parisian father who I grew up with, who was one of those, typical French fathers who put, wine. Do we need to be closer to the mics? Do you know? Okay. Who put, wine in my glass when I was, I think the age of, three onwards, I was having little sippers of wine. In an attempt to cultivate my palate from birth, pretty much. And from the moment that I had enough motor skills to hold a knife, he started teaching me knife skills and teaching me. So I would be sort of his sous chef when he would cook. And like most French people, he's just highly opinionated and very arrogant about, I feel like, France's greatest export. People think it's luxury goods, but I think it's arrogance. Sort of as a proxy response to his arrogance, I started feeling very empowered to have opinions about food, and I knew some of the guys who worked over at this alternative weekly, the Village Voice of Canada. The Village Voice of Toronto.
Good, yeah, definitely put it in context for LA.
Yeah, because anything you do in Canada is the moment that you cross the border into America, everyone's no one cares about any of the life you had in Canada before. I mainly was partying with the editors of this magazine, and on one evening that was probably quite drunk, I was just like, I'm ready to food call. And I was like, I can make hot. And then they were like, yeah, we come in for a meeting, and then I got the job, and I was...
So the bar is high in Canada.
The bar is super high in Canada, yeah. As long as you have, 24-pack of beers that you've, slammed, and you walk into a bar, you'll usually find somebody who's a writer, and you can convince them to give you, some column space. So that's sort of... I started with... I reviewed this Indian restaurant called the Jodhpur Cafe, and my... I was kind of biting the steez of Frank Bruni, who was writing... Mm-hmm. He was the food columnist over at the New York Times, and he just was always really good about, personalizing his columns and being very funny. And so I was like, oh, I'll just, take a page out of Frank Bruni's book. And, I wrote these kind of humorous wine food columns for a while. And then this very cruel man, came and bullied his way into the magazine, and he was, the managing editor, and he took my job. He's like, I'm really good at writing about food. And he, kicked me out. Alan Vernon.
I was just going to say, can you name names?
Alan Vernon, who...
We always name names on Culinaries, except for our own.
I will never work with Alan Vernon.
I'm going to make that pledge myself right now. No Alan Vernon. Is he on Twitter?
I don't know. He might be. Alan A. Vernon. And what I... Yeah, you should look him up. But I always... The most I could do in terms of, insulting him in a way that I thought could really bug him was I realized that the anagram of his name is Anal No Never.
Well, that's better than if it was anal all the time. Yeah,
anal all the time. He was a gay man. I mean, I'm not saying that participates in anal sex as members of the homosexual community, but yeah. So
I found Alan Vernon on Facebook. Does he have salt and pepper dreadlocks?
Oh my god! I mean, I wouldn't put it past him, but I don't. I think he was quite bald, actually. Is he in Toronto?
No, he works at Ford Motor Company.
No.
And he's from Belize.
I mean, I wish.
Shit to this guy, I think.
Is anyone single and wants a fix-up? Mr. Salt and Pepper Dreadlocks.
Yeah, this guy.
He's like a real winner.
Sounds like he's the lead singer of the Counting Crows in Belize.
He's got a job.
He's got a job. He lives in New York. He's got a job. He lives in New York.
Well, now hold on, guys. We can talk about Alan Vernon for the next 45 minutes. We actually need to check in with our man in the field, Pranz de Leon.
We do. He's expecting our call. He's out there somewhere. We don't even know where he is.
So this is going to take a little technology. Who's Franklin? Are you going to do the dial-up?
Sure. All right, we're calling Shane Kozakowski, a.k.a. Pranz de Leon.
Pranz de Leon.
What do you think about that, Catherine?
I'm going to say that I like, Franklin, I like yours the best. I like Pranz de Leo in the second, and you get the bronze, buddy. Sorry, Duncan.
I know. That's my own fault. My original name was Jean-Luc Chicken Picard.
See, and then, that I like.
But we're calling.
But then I realized there's no such food as Chicken Picard.
Going, and Catherine, how are you as well?
Hi, Shane. Can I just call you Shane right off the bat? Is that okay?
No, I prefer Mr. Kazakowski to be honest.
Sorry, Mr. Kazakowski.
Okay, great. How's it going in there, guys?
We're good.
We're good. We're good. How's it going out in the field?
It's going great in the field. I'm happy to say that I'm in what I would call the culinary epicenter of Los Angeles, which is Hollywood, as everyone knows.
Oh, yeah. Do you know if you press on, like, certain stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, they, like, raise up, like, a column, and there's, you can get, like, a snack?
Yes, yes, that's exactly where we are right now. That's so great that you brought it up, but we found a nice little enclave in Hollywood of our little Berlin, which is a upscale German restaurant, which is, I would say in Los Angeles, it's hard to find a German restaurant, right? There's Red Lion, there's a, you know, Berlin Currywurst, but there's a new one that's open in Hollywood called Lorelei, so we're here right now. As you know, Los Angeles has a rich German history from Billy Wilder to Ernst Lubitsch, and I'm here right now. We're going to try some schnitzel and some Kapfallen, and we're going to talk to a couple of people that are here, so... do you guys want to do that now, or can you call me back?
I think we're ready, Shane. Let's jump right into it.
Well, the woman just walked away. She said,
just find anyone. It won't be her. Anyone will do.
Well, we can call back. I mean, we were in the middle of a discussion. It's not like...
It's not like we need you.
Well, listen, guys. I mean, this is... Although the Germans, with their time, everyone thinks it runs on it, it's not what happens. I mean, sometimes it doesn't work like that. So just hang tight. I'm going to sit here and listen to some Wagner. And
it's pronounced Wagner.
I think it's up for debate. It looks like Wagner.
Yeah.
It does look like Wagner.
Why don't I order some food? You guys call back in a bit, and we'll get this party started.
That sounds great, Shane. So we'll just call back, and we'll try this again in a few minutes.
Sounds great.
Okay. All right, that was originally going to be a two-part call anyway, so don't think things didn't go as planned. They did go as planned.
I think it's good because we know who he is. We see the location.
We've established.
It won't be so jarring when we call him next time.
And there's a torrent of information that we all have to contend with.
We heard about the schnitzel and the other thing and the Red Lion. Now we can get right to it.
Do you know that you can kind of schnitzel anything? Like, I always thought schnitzel was, like, veal schnitzel, but you can just, like, you can literally take any food, or possibly anything, and any object in the world, pound it flat, and schnitzel it.
That's what a schnitzel means?
Well, schnitzel is just, like, you gotta pound something flat and dredge it, you know, in...
So what have you schnitzeled?
I've schnitzeled an oyster before. Mm. I've schnitzeled chicken. I could cut off your arm, peel the skin off the bone... Pound it flat and schnitzel it.
You said Trump is going to schnitzel America.
Trump is for sure going to schnitzel America. Yeah.
Veal into the politics already?
Well, you know, Duncan, you didn't do it yourself this week, but I thought there was a ripe area there.
You know, something's been on my mind.
What has been on your mind?
What?
For about the last 2 minutes, I've been thinking, should I have kept my culinaire's name, Jean-Luc Chicken Picard?
Yes.
Because the thing is, Chicken Picard isn't a thing.
But you could have inspired a dish via your name through Chicken
what
Picard.
What were you thinking of when you thought of there was a dish called Chicken Picard?
Chicken Picard.
Chicken Picard, yeah.
But
there's also Steak Picard. So that could be Jean-Luc Steak Picard, but that doesn't have the same ring.
What's Steak Picard?
I don't know.
I think it's from your thing. Steak Picard, I think.
If you look up Steak Picard. But I could change it back, although we do have T-shirts now. But again, before I ask you about which name you like better, you do know that Marco Pollo is a two-part name because after midnight, I'm Marco Pollo Loco.
I know. You told me that before.
Well, you also said it on the last radio show.
You just love saying that. You love saying the word culinaire, by the way.
Well, that's because it gives my name a little juice because I have a little name insecurity.
That's fine. I think it's actually overcompensating when you go into Marco Pollo Loco.
So I suggest live with having the most lackluster culinaire name?
Well, it just means that you have, you have under-promised, so you can over-deliver in various other areas.
Which you're not currently doing.
Yeah, right now you're, like, in a shame spiral by your name.
New topic.
Yeah. And you're doing thing is, like, you know, it's called nominative determinism, right? You have given yourself a name, and a lot of the time people who have powerful names turn, you know, do powerful things. Like, my first agent in Los Angeles was Rich Green, and he was, like, the head of the CAA literary department. And it's like, so of course he was going to succeed. His name was Rich Green. Like, he was going to get the greenbacks.
Right.
My name, Catherine Borel, it's Borel in French, that comes from Bourrelier, which was the town executioner. And I do feel like I slay.
Which you just did to Duncan, a.k.a. Marco Polo.
I'm just going to try to get Duncan to commit suicide.
This is going to haunt me for weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, my name, Duncan Birmingham, obviously sets me up to be a boat captain or a titan of industry.
Yes.
So there was, Marco Polo felt like a refreshingly low bar for a culinary.
It's true. Like, you should have a third. It should be Duncan Birmingham the third. Like, yes. You would very easily go for a third or a fourth.
Some that will be.
Knock on wood.
I will not have your baby.
Absolutely.
Okay. He will not have, as his advocate, he will not have your baby.
You'll find out I'm going to be caught dead. With your baby.
All right, let's get back into my questions.
Okay.
Let's put Kevin back on the hot seat and get me off the hot seat for
a
second.
Fair.
American food versus Canadian food.
Okay, this is a complicated question because...
It's a purposefully dumb question that I thought you would break down.
It's not a dumb question, but I'm going to break something down for you. It's very difficult to define Canadian culture because Canada defines itself in opposition to America. So we don't have as much of a distinct identity without mirroring or like sort of doing a pivot away from what you guys are. So, like, for example, we have certain things that we're really proud of that are part of our national identity. Socialized healthcare, like better social services generally, an eye towards multiculturalism rather than the melting pot. We don't have the same sense of exceptionalism because we have nothing to feel exceptional about. So, as a result, a lot of our stuff is just, like, the old tired shit that came over from Europe. That, you know, lots of meat boiling and freezing up there, so it's kind of like everyone's too cold to go out. And so the only, I will say this about Canadian food. We were one of the places where slow food kind of was born. There was a chef who operated out of Vancouver, whose name is obviously now escaping me, who went to Italy, kind of got into the slow food vibe in the 70s, was like, I'm going to, you know, mimic this here in Vancouver. And that actually ended up kind of like inspiring a lot of stuff that happened in Northern California with Alice Waters and stuff like that. So we've got that. What I will say about Canada is because we are a multicultural nation, we have, like, great various sandwiches from various countries. Like, when I lived in Toronto, in Chinatown, but it also had, like, a Vietnamese portion of it, so I could go and get, like, a $2 kick-ass $2 banh mi. And then I could go, like, 15 minutes away and get, like, an amazing dosa from some, like, Sri Lankan or Indian place. So Canadian food, I think, is more defined by the fact that we're very proud of our multicultural element in the country.
Let me just interject and say that I think citing one of your cultural, something that you're proud of culturally in Canada as sandwiches is like the most Canadian thing I've ever heard before.
Because it's so low-key.
Well, because it's
shock anyone.
It's universally adored by the world.
Yeah.
And also not offensive or edgy.
There's nothing, there's no food possibly besides, like, maybe a pile of mashed potatoes that is less offensive than, like, a tiny sandwich.
I love it.
That's a great observation, actually. I really do feel like...
Sandwiches are the national food of Canada.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we'd all be a better world if sandwiches were the national food of all of us.
I don't know if this is true, but I would say the national clothes would be, like, shorts.
In Canada?
Yeah.
It's freezing there.
But not as a practical thing, like, as more of, like, what they represent. Something that everybody likes.
That's like everyone looks forward to, like, shorts weather.
Kind of casual.
I think a pair of cargo shorts is definitely Canada.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think in that respect, if I was to be, like, I don't know, maybe Canadian food because of that element. But you know, when, like, I've gone on, like, a 60-mile bike ride, there's nothing that I want more than, like, a good American cheeseburger.
I was waiting for you to drop one of your bike ride mileages.
Yeah, I bike a lot.
60 miles, everybody.
It's weird, but that's what happens, really. I have to do such a dramatic amount of exercise in order to not be 300 pounds because I feel like I eat like 8,000 calories a day. I eat like a Michael Phelps level or like the Rock level amount of food every day.
What are you calorieing every day?
What do you mean in terms of like the food that I eat or the pavement miles that I'm...
The food you eat.
I'm like a two breakfast person. Like I like to have a savory element to my breakfast. I'll do like a couple of eggs, like shitloads of vegetables inside, like a slow scramble, like served over toast with like maybe like an arugula salad dressed with like lemon and olive oil.
And you're making this.
I'm making this, and then I'll have like a big smoothie that's like tons of frozen fruit, banana, orange juice, like spinach in there. I'll drink like a coffee and a cold matcha beverage. I'll have like usually like a bit of granola and yogurt as like a mid morning snack. For lunch, I love a sandwich.
We know.
Yeah. And then I do like a really like baroque salad for dinner, you know, or I'll make like vegetarian tacos. Like just my new thing is I just get a shitload of vegetables, roast them all up, and then I just like either put them on a rice bowl or put them in a taco or just because you just slop them into whatever carb that you're eating. I don't eat 8,000 calories a day, but I'm definitely eating like 4,000 calories a day.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's too much.
Let me back it up, guys. I had an interesting food experience this week, and I want to take a little poll.
Okay.
So I got invited to a little dinner party. It was a celebrity. I'm not going to get into who it was. It's not a
big deal. I thought we named names on the Culinaires.
But,
say it.
No, I'll double.
Come on.
I'll say it.
Please say it.
Now I feel weird. I actually do feel weird. Now.
Was it Oprah?
It's close.
Was it a TV star?
Was it Patrick Stewart?
It's not someone I work with. It's not a big deal. It's not a star.
Are you sleeping together?
No.
Would you like to?
No.
Okay.
It's not that kind of star.
All right.
But the question was, it was a text, having a dinner party, want to come over? And I said, can I bring anything? I meant booze. And they said, bring a bottle of wine if you want, no pressure, but if you want to bring a dish. And as someone who's a bad cook and very insecure about my cooking, I was like, oh, does that mean I should cook a dish or I should bring a dish? And then I decided, I'm just going to bring a dish, but I wanted to kind of dazzle, bring something cool from around town with something where I didn't really try too hard.
Well, it says a lot about you. You're showing up somewhere, and this is your calling card.
Right. This is my calling card.
She's buying something expensive from somewhere else and showing up.
Maybe not something expensive,
but it shows your taste.
Something
and knowledge.
A little bit of a hole in the wall. I was trying to think of something very Culinaires-y. I texted a few people.
So what did you bring?
I ended up bringing chocolate covered macaroons from Cafe Tropical, which I like. It's in the neighborhood. This person's new to the neighborhood, and I thought, hey, do you know Cafe Tropical? And I thought they probably don't have dessert covered. Guess what? They had ice cream, but nothing to put over it. And my chocolate covered macaroons were a hit.
I don't know if showing up with a dessert is brilliant. Or cowardly.
I know.
I think it's brilliant.
I could be seen as cowardly.
I could be seen as cowardly because it's so, like, that's such a prepared, like, a highly prepared food. And it's very small.
Yeah, and you're banking on the value of your item relying on that no one else brought dessert. So
I know, but
what does that have to stand up to?
I took a gamble, and it paid off because not only my macaroons were
risky
very large, and people were cutting them up like they were slices of cake.
What? How big were these macaroons?
They're big. Well, see, you don't know Cafe Tropical macaroons aren't just regular.
Oh, shit, no, I've had them. I used to live in the neighborhood.
I mean,
they're delicious.
Buttery, delicious. I had two.
They're very large, you're right.
That I didn't bring in because I had two boxes, and I was like, oh, I got two extra. I don't want to bring two boxes in a bag, so I left them in my car, and I shoved them in my face on the way home.
Yeah.
It was like eating a pie. My question is, there is a question.
Okay.
Let's say you're going to a dinner party. You don't have time to cook. You live in L.A. What might you bring?
Korean chicken wings.
That would have been a disaster because everything was vegetarian and I didn't know that when I got there.
So there's more Korean chicken wings
on my face. So you just got the answer wrong.
Here.
But that's not the fault of my wings. That's the fault of these people who are having a vegetarian potluck and not telling you that.
That's very true.
Read the crowd, my friend.
Did you know that it was a vegetarian meal?
I didn't because I thought about bringing Korean chicken wings because I texted Franklin, what should I bring?
If pulling the curtain back.
And if I
have to sound like it's improvised.
And if I had cooked something, it would have been like a chili or something, so it would have been a beefy meal.
But did you know? So you had to check with the host that.
I didn't. I just gambled, and when I just.
Wait. So hold on a second. I have a huge complaint.
Just happened to be all vegetarian.
I have a huge complaint about like Oprah's dinner party that you went to. If you're having a vegetarian dinner and you are expected to bring a dish, why does she not, or he did not disclose that it was a vegetarian meal?
It's a dick move.
It's such a dick move.
I don't know, unless there was meat buried in something I didn't notice, but there was a saute, I didn't see any meat, so maybe it just was a coincidence that everyone brought vegetarian, but it seemed all vegetarian. Everything was delicious, by the way.
I wouldn't put it past you to be wrong about that, and it was completely not vegetarian.
I agree, because I really do think that if you're hosting something and it is a vegetarian meal and you're soliciting people for contributions, you have to lay the groundwork.
Well, I don't know if people brought dishes. I actually think the host did most of the cooking. I asked a few people. I said, did you bring anything? That made me get a lot of kudos for my macaroons. But there was satay and a lot of grains. It was actually really delicious.
I have a lot of questions. Okay, so the celebrity was the person who was hosting the dinner?
Yes.
Okay. And you have developed the kind of relationship with the celebrity where you were the only person who was called upon to bring anything?
Oh, no. I think he or she might have thrown out the invitation to a few people. Remember, I said the text was casual. If you would like to bring something, you know, no big deal. After I had
either tell me to bring something or not. I want to know how much food is going to be there. This is a
terrible. I am with you completely.
I've ended up in the hot seat. Catherine, what would you bring?
I'd bring a large composed salad with like a homemade dressing.
I like your description of a Baroque salad.
Yeah. It's like, I just think that people, like making salad is kind of boring. But everyone always appreciates like a salad with like a little bit of a kick. Like if you do a, like my new thing is that instead of like, okay, first of all, I have a crouton philosophy. I always mortar and pestle my croutons because you can't fork a crouton. And therefore you can have like a suggestion of crouton all over the salad. Crumbs, yeah, just pulverize them. So it's just like you get like, you still get the crunch, you still get the flavor, but it's much easier to fork. What I've been doing recently is I've been like roasting chickpeas with a little bit of olive oil and garlic at like 400 degrees, so they, you have like a crunchy little chickpea.
We just had crunchy chickpeas at Lausanne, and they were delicious with the beef cheek that we ate.
It was a menudo. It was a Filipino menudo.
It was amazing.
The band Menudo.
It was, yes.
You were eating the corpses of Menudo.
I was giggling when he kept saying Menudo, too.
I would also.
Yeah.
I bring a large salad because it's like everyone wants to. Basically, everyone's like, I need to eat a salad. It's good for my asshole. And so I like to be the. But I like to make it a little. I don't like to just do a leaf. I like to do a chop. And I like to do. A roasted vegetable on top, or some kind of either like candied or like dry fried nut.
You do a grain in there?
I'll do a grain. I love a wheat. I love like a crunchy wheat berry. I love a base of farro. I'm super into farro right now. Mm-hmm. It's really pleasant. They're like little seashells. Mm. Farros.
Or a barley, I like.
I love a pearl barley. Pearl barley is a miracle food. What a beautiful little food that is.
We're going to get back into salads because I want to also use that as a springboard to talk about why I almost left the culinaires this week.
What?
Stomach issues. But I think we need to check in with Prawns de Leon.
All right.
For part B.
That's a good cliffhanger where you almost left the culinaires and then no one's going to care about what he has to say.
That's called broadcasting.
Yeah. It's kind of mean to prawns, though. Oh, it's ringing.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Dude, like, I had this interview secured with this woman, and now it's, like, gone off the rails. I don't know what to tell you guys. What's going on in there? Anything good?
What exactly happened? You texted me. You said, I've got her here. Call me now.
Well, we got in a little argument because the interview was supposed to go on, and she got a little tired of waiting, although it's dead in here, and now all of a sudden I have a bunch of German enemies.
Who is this lady?
Well, I mean, she's bigger than me, and so, I mean, like, I don't know what to say. I would start a little issue, but I'm the only one in here who's drunk, and they seem to be a little upset with me.
What did you think she was going to say to you?
Well, I mean, I want to talk about the menu, I want to get into some stuff, but, I mean, they just don't seem too pleased to have me around.
Why don't you walk over right now and grab something that works there, and let's ask them some questions.
Yeah, just grab the first person you see.
Well, there's a guy named Nick Cab. He doesn't seem too pleased to have me around. There's a girl named Joanne. She's actually been pretty cool.
Let's get Joanne. Let's get Joanne.
I like the sound of Joanne.
You know what? Hang up.
He just hung up.
Oh, that's it.
That was part number two, the Prawns de Leon. I don't think it was any better than the first one.
I think it's a little bit worse.
I would say that was a lot of setup. with minimal payoff for a man in the field.
I have a feeling that number three is going to be the one. We're going to call him back in 10 minutes, or we're going to get this interview.
Okay, I'm skeptical. Because I was enjoying our chat.
I'm excited to see if it's going to happen. And if it fails, it's also very funny. Like, I don't know, we're going to win the situation.
Let's telescope out. We're drinking some wine.
Oh, yeah.
What are we drinking? Kelly, what do you bring for us tonight?
So, before we jump on the wine, I don't know anything about your background in wine.
So one of the things that was also a hallmark of my father, he's still alive. I always talk about him like he's dead, but he's definitely still alive. He's a huge enophile, and so he's always had like a massive wine cellar for most of my life, all of my life, and was always like, I didn't realize this until later, but was always kind of dragging us all around the dinner table and like making us do like horizontal and vertical tastings of bottles from his cellar. Which was always, to me, seemed like an opportunity for him to just analogize.
Horizontal and vertical tastings?
Oh, yeah. So when you do a horizontal tasting, you take one particular vintage, like 1961, and then you drink a bunch of different wines from different wineries from that year of the region. So if you do, like, a Burgundy horizontal tasting, you take, like, year 61, you take a few different houses. And
different grapes?
No, well, if you're doing Burgundy, it's all Pinot Noir or Chardonnay. Like, that's basically all they make wine with. But, no, you want to do, like, that's actually a good question. But, no, mainly it's, like, you kind of do similarly.
Same year, same.
Yeah, just to see, like, how people were making their wines. And then a vertical tasting is you take one particular bottle of wine and you go, like, 61, 62, 63, 64, 65 to see how, you know, the growing conditions and wine-making techniques changes.
Cool.
Yeah. So we were doing that a lot. And I was always a little bit resentful because it always felt like there was an answer he was looking for from, like, me and my little brother and my mom about what shit tasted like. And so I always felt like I was in the hot seat, like I am now.
How old were you when you were doing this?
It started at, like, 6, like, real young. He just wanted us to, like, taste, virgin palates, you know, so he was always, like, trying to take advantage of the fact that we had, you know, we had these, like, very fresh palates that hadn't been, like, walloped with various spicy foods and cigarettes and pipes and all the pipes that I started smoking when I was older. So I kind of started to ignore the wine stuff because I became fearful of the fact that I was disappointing my father every time we sat down to do a tasting. But then he had this accident where, like, he kind of, he snapped the tendons in both his knees, and that was when I was in my early 20s. And it was that, like, big moment you have with your parents where you realize they're not going to be around forever because suddenly he was walking with a limp and with a cane. And so I saw him as infirm for the first time and started projecting outwards towards his death. And so one day, it was the summer of, like, 2003, I think, he was hobbling around and ended up, like, taking a real, like, cinematic tumble down the stairs to his wine cellar. And I heard this, like, crash and a scream, and I, like, ran over, and he was, like, hunched on the floor, and I got him out of the cellar, and I put him in his chair, and I was like, well, what were you going to make us taste today? And he gave me the names of some Burgundies that we were going to do, and I was looking around in the cellar, which has, like, a few thousand bottles of wine in it, and I was like, he's 66. There's, like, thousands of wines in here. There's no way he's going to be able to drink his way through the cellar. So if I don't get this stuff, like if I don't understand, it's going to be mine one day. It's going to be bequeathed to me. And if I don't get all the information I can out of him, I'll never really understand him. And if I don't understand him, maybe I'll never understand myself fully. So I had a real, like, existential crisis in the cellar.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. So that led to me in 2005 suggesting that we take, like, a road trip through France, like, which is his native soil. So I could, like, kind of dig my hands into, like, his native soil and figure out, like, why he has such a relation, like, why he can tell me the specific growing conditions of a bottle of Burgundy, and yet he always misses my birthday by, like, 2 days. He says, like, you're born on June 21st, right? I'm like, June 23rd, like, close enough. But he can tell you, like, the vine orientation of, like, a Romane Conti from 1979, you know? So we took this trip, which I thought was going to be this kind of magical bonding trip, and was a complete disaster. It was just, like, me and him in a car for, like, 4 weeks through France, which, like, again, was idyllic because that's what a privileged thing to do, but we just, like, yelled at each other and fought, and I was just off a breakup, and it was really hard, and I thought I was never going to talk to him again. I was like, my dad's a fucking asshole, like, and then I ended up writing about it, and I wrote this book, and I didn't think it was going to do anything, and then it ended up selling, and then I gave him the draft, and he read it, and he was like, I thought you were going to write a book where I was the hero. I didn't realize I was going to be the villain. And he apparently wept for, like, 3 days straight. And since has now, like, modified all the problematic behaviors that he used to exhibit based on reading himself as a character in my book. So.
What is the name of the book?
Oh, it's called Porked.
The book is fantastic, by the way.
Thank you, Ducky.
You can plug away. And nice. I was going to ask you what your dad thought of the book.
He was traumatized by it, and then he, like, quickly was like, sorry, and started, like, making amends, and, like, he doesn't yell at waiters anymore in restaurants, and he doesn't, you know.
So if you guys go out in the book, there's a lot of your dad getting mad
at
waiters for what he feels is not up to snuff service. So if you guys go out and the service is not up to snuff, what does he do? How does he combat this?
You can see
to get angry.
It like roiling in his body that he wants to do something, and then he goes, he's got like a very sort of like British-y French accent. He goes, I'm sorry. And then he'll it's almost like a robot kind of having like a circuit break in his brain or something, and he'll just like, you can just see him like reprogramming in this like very hefty way, and then he goes, I say nothing, and then like me and my mom do all the ordering.
So what's a win-win with that book then?
Sales wise, total flop, but healed my family.
Really?
Yeah, it really did.
So is this what we're drinking, something of your father's world? Or?
No, we are actually drinking something. So my local wine shop is Silver Lake Wine.
Love Silver Lake Wine.
It's the best.
Jasper.
This is Jasper's wine. So Jasper Dixon is a young winemaker who got into the game in 2013. And he's what's known as like a garagiste, a garagist. So he's like a small operation. He makes a handful of wines. And this one he actually paired up with a winemaker called Alphonse de Rose, who's got tons of stuff that he's doing down in Chile. And it's called El Ritmo, which means rhythm. And Jasper's wine is a wine company. It's called Rhythm Wines. And it's a Cabernet Sauvignon and that grape that they grow down there that's like a Merlot type, which is a Carrere, I think is the name of it. A great blending grape.
Okay.
So this is like, you know.
You're looking at Bill Palmstrong, and I like, we're going to correct you.
And that's not the case.
I was like, it's definitely not.
No, Malbec is like more like Argentina, but yeah, okay, so it's a blend. But they're both like Bordeaux style. They're both like Bordeaux derived grapes. So they're aping, you know, Bordelais winemaking techniques.
Okay.
And he's like a big, you know, like a big pleasant furry dude, which I thought would be fun on like a Sunday. You know, Sunday you usually get the Sunday panics or like, what's my week gonna be like?
Right.
And this is like a hug from a. From a friend, a hairy friend.
I love it. I usually don't like a hug from a hairy friend.
I think it's delicious.
You are the hugger. You're the hairy hugger.
I am the hairy hugger.
Yeah. So you like it?
I like it.
Yeah.
Would you say that it's like a little bit earthy?
It's definitely earthy. I find that it's kind of like It seems like it's going to maybe be like a bit of a fruit bomb, but then it's not. It kind of like takes a left turn, and then it's like, hey, I'm austere, actually.
I can have
a good time.
Yeah.
I really like it. Now, we're drinking wine. I was told that Bill Palmstrong was bringing some snacks.
I did bring some snacks. I don't think they're going to pair with this, but I brought some snacks.
All right, well, I'll leave it there. I've got a question for Catherine if you want to unwrap your snacks.
I'm excited.
Can I ask one question?
Is it chicken wings?
Oh, okay.
My only question would be, what would your father say about this one?
My dad would say, it's hard to tell with him. I think he would like it because he's super into California Zins right now, which are like, he likes wines that are at like a decent price point. What I like about my dad is that even though he's got a pretty like nice wine collection, he's always looking for like the $11 steal, which is like what I think, that's why you're an actual pro at wine, is like anyone who's got some money can spend $300 on a bottle of wine and be like, look at me, I don't know so much about wine, look at this beautiful wine I bought. But like the true pros are the ones who are like, this is $9 and it's dope. And so I think that he would be stoked on this one because it's at a very like, I think I was $14 or something, and it's got some presence and it's got some depth. You know, it's not like it's not an insanely complex wine, but like he would call it a great quaffing wine.
A great what wine?
Quaffing wine. To quaff is like just to kind of like enjoy, not to ruminate on. When you're quaffing, you're just kind of like eating, having a good time with like food and wine, you know?
I love that.
I think most of my imbibing is quaffing.
Yeah, you gotta quaff. It's like cash. It's low key.
Well, I have a question before my other question. Wine cellars, I don't really understand how they work. Is your dad's wine cellar, if there are thousands of wines, are they organized?
They're organized.
Are they organized in a way that only he knows?
That's exactly what it is. They're organized in a way, like, there's clusters of certain ones, but, and also he organizes them a little bit by size, because he's got, like, a Methuselah in there, you know, which is, like, 10 bottles of wine in one. He's got some magnums, he's got some double magnums, so there's, like, clusters of big wines. But he's, like, mainly a French guy, so there's, like, he's a Burgundy nut, so he loves Burgundy, which, you know, kind of makes the most... They grow the Pinot Noir grape there. That's the grape that's called the heartbreak grape. It's got a real thin skin, so if the conditions are even a little bit bad, they'll like shiver up and be like, we don't want to make wine this season. But if done properly, like, they are enormous, complex, friendly, like it's like poetry if you get a good one, you know. So they fan out on the tongue in a phenomenon called the peacock's tail. It just feels like, you know, it just feels like a panoply of like beautiful sensations if you get a good one. So he's a nut about that because it's kind of like there's something kind of sexy about the revealing of a good Pinot.
The peacock's tail. So that would only be how it spreads out with a Pinot.
With a Burgundian Pinot. Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. I brought some. Japanese style red bean mochi.
Dude, I love a mochi.
So, I also brought some century eggs, but I don't think those are gonna.
What's a century egg?
A century egg, well, also, they are in their shells and it's just gonna be too much. A century egg is a Chinese fermented egg.
Ooh.
Look how pretty it is.
Oh, it's beautiful.
That you take a chicken or duck or quail egg
that
or
looks like
or whatever.
Is that a duck egg or no, it's a chicken egg? It's a duck egg.
And it's sort of gray and speckled with black, and you preserve it with ash or lye.
Oh man!
So
it's like a corpse egg.
They're 500 years ago when they needed to preserve their extra eggs.
That's how they did it.
They would put them, and the alkaline in the ash somehow raises the pH of the egg, and what you end up with is this sort of gelatinous. The white turns into like a gelatinous black.
Huh.
And the yolk turns into like a gray or green kind of preserved yolk, and they're delicious.
They're like zombie eggs, basically.
They're really good. Maybe we can try one.
Now, I have to say, I think we had one in Orange County, and I didn't find it that delicious.
I find the taste to be kind of mild. I don't even really know how to describe it.
I mean, if you crack it open, it's going to be a little dark.
They're black.
Yeah. As the man with the most milk-toasty Culinaire's nickname, do you find that you have the most, like, sensitive, milk-toasty palate?
Catherine, thank you. Well, actually, I find myself to have the most sophisticated palate, but the most sensitive tummy.
Tummy, I know you have a sensitive tummy.
You guys want to try a red bean?
Yeah,
tell our listeners what you and describe them, and in the meantime, I'll get into this century egg, also known as a thousand-year egg.
And thank you for cueing me up to why I almost had to leave the Culinaires.
Oh,
that's also a story like Jonathan Gold.
Oh, my God.
That I'll tease out over many episodes, because I really feel like I've got a lot more that I want to bring up.
So
here's the century egg, as you can see. It looks like...
It looks like the red bean paste inside
like
the mochi.
Science fiction kind of...
Whoa!
It's pretty crazy looking.
Yeah, it looks like there's going to be an alien inside of it.
Yeah. It's like a shiny black... jelly almost.
Mm-hmm.
And there it is. And it's very,
It looks like a silly putty, like someone kind of like dipped silly putty in onyx.
It's very firm. And I'm cutting it.
Bill, will you hold that up?
Yeah. So, and then you can see this like kind of dark gray preserved yolk.
Whoa, that's really. That's kind of scary.
You want to try it?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to fish out my mochi, but. Oh, wow. And the texture of it.
I'm going to tweet out a picture of the century-old egg on the Twitter account, which reminds me, if anyone wants to ask the Culinaires or Catherine a question about food, about wine, about whatever, you can tweet at us right now, because this is live radio.
I think this is delicious, by the way.
Let me see.
It doesn't have a very strong taste.
Mmm!
Right?
This is like a super mild, hard-boiled egg.
Yeah.
The consistency is the crazy part.
Whoa! What's weird, so, that's the ashiness that I'm picking up. But the yolk almost tastes, for a second, like an ashy goat cheese. Which I'm sure it's just from the ash, but like,
a goat cheese.
It's got that like Barney flavor that ashy, like old ashy goat cheese has, you know what I mean?
I'm getting it.
Yeah.
Break me off a little piece of that, and we're actually winding down into the today's episode, which is pretty crazy because I feel like we barely scratched the surface.
Oh, wait, I need to do the things that... Wait, okay, so here's one thing I want to say. I think that the Culineers is not a great name, and I think that, but I want you guys to succeed.
That is something I've never heard.
Okay, well, that's my opinion, but because I never say no without offering an alternative...
You've been in a writer's room before.
I've been in a writer's room
you
before.
Down,
you can't go through that without trying to rebuild the sweater. Okay, so my alternate names for you guys are Rich Dudes Indulging in Dirty Meats.
I don't know if it has the same ring.
No. What about Balls Soup in Gross Parts of the City?
That sounds like... It sounds delicious.
That sounds like a name of an episode of the Culineers.
Okay, so this is something that I think you guys will like because it's pretty adjacent to the Culineers. And it's actually, you know, it's a little like tip of the hat to you, Duncan.
Oh, I love a tip of the hat to me. Especially when it's to me.
The Barfeteers. So that's how you can take over the Culineers because you're probably the one who's always barfing the most.
Actually, that would be Beef Erickson has been our only public barfer. I'm the one who feels fine, has a great night, and then the next day I wake up in pain. And my bathroom... for the past 2 weeks has just been like covered with bottles of Pepto-Bismol and Zantac and prescriptions.
This is a great image to go out on.
Yeah.
I've got diarrhea all the time because of the Culineers.
I've got a final question for a special guest.
Okay.
Obviously, as our listeners know, your wine and food bona fides are through the roof.
Okay.
Definitely know a lot. Ooh. Let's say, I think it's still fair to say, is associated with men, with sophistication, with glamour, with smarts. Let's say you're out on a date, or you've been out on a date with someone, and you're going to order some wine. What's the number one mistake men make with wine?
Oh, they pretend to know everything, when I think it's just like, it's such a nice thing just to like call over the sommelier and have a conversation about what the two people at the table like. So it becomes a democratic process rather than a patriarchal, like, I'll take her over wine, little lady. That way, and also that means that, like, you know what else that says is if you have a nice interaction with the sommelier, you present yourself as someone who is kind to wait staff, which I think is, like, a great virtue in a man.
That is a huge virtue in a man or a woman.
Uh-huh.
If I'm on a date and a person is even a little snippy, I don't even see them as a sexual being anymore.
Yeah.
I just want to run.
Person who's in your life that you have to like drown in the lake.
It's about the same as if you're not into pets.
But here's my question with the sommelier. I love to call a sommelier over and just talk about like flavors and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
When does like are they? How do they know how much I want to spend?
Oh, you just tell them.
I just tell them.
Yeah, you're like I'm just something like, hey, I don't feel like spending $100 tonight. I want to spend $30. What's your best $30 bottle of wine?
Yeah.
And I think that just, like, saying it...
And, like, babes are, like, they dig that.
Babes are like, hey, you're assertive. And also, like, you... Also, it's a rip-off to spend money. Because they're marking it up to the tune of, like, 150, 200%. So it's actually foolish to spend a lot of money on wine.
So I've been right all along.
You've been right all along.
And I've been wrong. Because I've been spending, like, crazy when I go out on dates.
Duncan's super rich.
That's what I do. I can't stop spending, ladies. Anyway, I want to thank our guest. I mean, look at the time. It's
that's fast, you guys.
Look at the time. So I think, Avil, if you want to play us out, I want to thank our guest, Catherine Burrell.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
What a treat.
What a treat for me.
I think that we should have Catherine back.
Sure. You know what? I think we should have Catherine back.
Because we only scratched the surface.
Yeah. Wait, guys, are you going to make me a Culineer?
Well, you come up with your Culineer name. We didn't come up with your Culineer name.
We can do a two-parter, and we can come up with the Culineer name. Hey, can you tweet? People can tweet at me my Culineer name.
I didn't even get to check the Twitter questions, but I've heard some dinging, so I feel like we have a few.
I think that our listeners should tweet at...
Kitty Bordelaise.
Kitty Bordelaise. Or at the Culineers, what they think your name should be.
I love it.
The only rules are that it's an explorer and a food are mashed together in some kind of delightful pie.
Oh, right. Yes, that's right. Okay. Got it.
It's actually a lot of rules.
There's only like 10,000 rules. That's tons of rules.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.